Hello.
Hi, and welcome to Mass Murder, a true crime self-care podcast. We're your hostesses, Avery
and Nicole, and we're here to tell you about two things, masks and murder. First, we're going to dive into a little true crime story, and then we'll follow it up with a little feel-good self-care session where we try out a new face mask, tell you what we think about it, and just kind of chat a little bit.
Yeah, but before we dive into the story, we want to remind everyone that we are not experts, so please don't take our comments as hard facts. We did our best to research everything and, of course, added in a personal little flair that stems from both of our true crime obsessions.
Yes.
And today, we're going to discuss the horrific murder of 16-year-old Skylar Annette Neese. Her unfortunate demise led to an update in the Amber Alert legislation, and we will touch on how that all occurred in a little bit. So let's start from the beginning. Skylar was born February 10th, 1996, and was the only child to Mary and Dave Neese. The family lived in Star City, which is a small suburb of Morgantown, West Virginia, with a whopping 1,800 residents and one whole stoplight.
Ooh!
Fancy, I know. Actually, it'd be kind of charming to live in a town with one stoplight. All right, anyhow.
Yeah.
Early tangent. She was your typical all-American girl with a bubbly, outgoing personality. She was smart from a young age. Her dad remembers her reading and doing math earlier than most kids. Skylar's oldest friend was Morgan Lawrence, who was probably Skylar's very best and first friend. The two met in nursery school and became fast friends, which led to the two families becoming close as well. Their parents said that the girls acted more like sisters than friends. Like a lot of young girls do with their best friends, they made a pact to always be there for each other no matter what. They daydreamed of the days that they could be there for each other as they walked down the aisle and what life would look like after school. Skylar even decided that she wanted to be a criminal lawyer when she grew up. Over time, the girls started to drift apart when they started their freshman year at university high school. Not saying that they stopped being friends completely, just that the two weren't as close as they were before. You know, new school meant new people, the opportunity for new friends, new experiences, blah, blah, blah. Plus, high school is one of your first opportunities to start branching out, trying new things, and start figuring out who you really are and who you want to be. And that's exactly what happened, in terms of their friendship anyway.
So, Skylar soon had two new besties. Sheila Eddy, who Skylar and her family actually had known for years because the girls met at a community center when they were in second grade. And Rachel Schoaf. The three girls were all only children and formed a quick bond. It's said that Skylar was the emotional support or like rock of the group, and maybe that could be because she was the only one out of the group whose parents were still together. And their classmates recalled the girls all being together just all the time. You know, sounds kind of like they were a package deal.
Yeah, just like us.
Exactly. So the three girls eventually dubbed themselves the Three Musketeers. Like, all groups of three do that.
Oh, yeah, of course. You have to.
Yeah. So Sheila was the fun-loving, free member of the group and was accepted by Skylar's family as her best friend, and they treated her as if she was their own daughter. Skylar's mother, Mary, recalls in an All That's Interesting article, quote, "Sheila didn't even knock on the door when she came over. She just came on in," end quote. Which, I mean...
Sounds like you.
Yeah. I'm like, do I ring the door? No, I'll just walk in. I got a key.
Yeah, that's you nice. Just go in, you announce yourself so someone doesn't think, like, stranger danger.
I mean, I just usually yell, don't be naked!
Yeah, anyone home, also acceptable.
No. I like don't be naked.
Hey, family, perhaps.
Fair. All acceptable.
Yeah.
Either way. The three girls were... your typical teenagers. They shared things online, sent each other pictures, and occasionally got into trouble. When asked about the getting into trouble part, Skylar's parents said that they weren't really all that worried. After all, she was a straight-A student and had a loving relationship with both of her parents. She typically just got into the, you know, typical teenage shenanigans.
Mm-hmm.
And now, Skylar's friend Morgan wasn't exactly a fan of Skylar's new friends. She especially didn't like Sheila, who she thought hung out with the wrong crowd. I feel like that's saying a lot for a teenager.
Yeah, that's kind of true. No, I guess I had friends that I thought ran with maybe, like, rougher people, but I don't know.
I don't know. But Sheila actually had a lot of friends that were in their 20s, and that was just, you know, weird, which I'm paraphrasing, but yeah. She's right. What 20-year-old wants to hang out with a 13, 14-year-old
Yes,
kid?
Yes, that one is a little surprising.
Yeah. She worried about Skylar, and she watched uncomfortably as she became closer and more inseparable with Rachel and Sheila. Skylar's cousin Kyle, who was close with Skylar and adored her, worried about her too. He noticed changes in her more so around like sophomore year. She seemed more sour, less bubbly, and actually closer to how Sheila acted.
So let's fast forward to Thursday, July 5th, 2012. It was Skylar's sophomore year, year 10 for anyone not in the U.S., and she seemed to be perfectly happy. That evening, she had worked the night shift at Wendy's, getting home around 10 p.m. She reportedly loved her job, and her coworkers loved having her as part of the team. She was known as being reliable, punctual, and well-liked by both her managers and coworkers. After arriving home, she told her parents that she loved them and went to bed. The following day, July 6th, Skylar and her dad had plans to meet at their home and just grab a quick bite together for lunch. But when he got there, Skylar was nowhere to be found. Dave was a little surprised by this since it was incredibly unlike Skylar, so he called his wife to see if she knew where their daughter might be. Mary suspected that she was probably out with a girlfriend, maybe shopping at the mall or at the pool swimming. Dave started calling around to her friends to see if they had seen her or just knew where their daughter was. Again, I mean, these girls were thick as thieves and even close to each other's families, so shouldn't be hard to find her, right? But
one thing.
Yeah, but no one knew anything. No one had seen her. Then Dave walked around the outside of the house where he saw a bench right outside of Skylar's window and noticed that the window screen had been popped out. Dave went full dad and started to repeatedly call her cell phone upwards of 10 times, leaving her messages saying things like, "You're in trouble, you better call me back," you know, dad type of things. He called Mary back, but she still told him just to calm down. Skylar was expected at work at 4.
And, I mean, honestly, I feel like I probably would have been like Mary at this point. I mean, I know personally there were several times when I was a teenager that if I was out doing something that I knew I wasn't supposed to do or that my mom wouldn't be happy about, I'd just dodge calls until I was somewhere that I was supposed to be or that was acceptable.
I mean, yeah, for sure. But if my dad left 10 phone calls or voicemails, I guess, or if he called me 10 times, if my dad had called me twice, I would have just been like, oh, okay, this is real. And, you know, turned up pretty quickly. But I don't know. It's pretty scary for the parents. I do understand from like the mom point of view, though, trying to, I guess, calm yourself down by saying outwardly, like, it's fine, it's fine, she's fine, she'll turn up.
Oh yeah, I feel like everybody does that, not just moms.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
But so Mary told Dave that they would wait until about 10 minutes or so after 4 to give Skylar time to punch in at her shift at work, and then they would start to call the restaurant in general and see where she had been. But unfortunately, they did not get that chance. The team at Wendy's ended up calling them. They were looking for Skylar and wondering if she was going to come to work that day. This, of course, sparked worry in both parents. Shortly after that, perhaps even minutes later, Mary got another call.
Now, this call was from Skylar's best friend, Sheila. She said she had to tell Mary the truth, that the girls had snuck out the night before. And just a side note, Skylar had snuck out one other time with her friends that Mary knew of. And in that instance, the girls had snuck out for a little joyride, but they were caught for being out after the town curfew. So back to Sheila's call, Mary asking her for more details on where they went, where her daughter was, all the expected questions. Sheila told Mary that they had brought Skylar home, but that Skylar had insisted on being dropped off at the end of the road so that her parents wouldn't hear her sneaking back in. Makes sense. So their minds immediately went to the bench that Dave had seen outside of Skylar's bedroom window. So it obviously made more sense to them now. Skylar had put it there so she'd be able to reach the window when she was sneaking back in. And probably also to make it easier to get out.
Yes, both.
Yeah. But then her parents had another thought. And it's probably where my mind would go, that someone had abducted her after she'd been dropped off and her friends had driven away. So they immediately called the police. They told them that their 16-year-old daughter was missing. that she apparently snuck out of the house in the middle of the night, but now they couldn't get a hold of her and her friends hadn't seen her or heard from her since the previous night. So, Officer Jessica Colbank was assigned to the case. Her first impression was that it could be a runaway. After all, it happens all the time. But it wasn't long before Officer Colbank got the security footage from the niece family's apartment building. Sheila had told the family that they dropped Skylar off at home around midnight, but Skylar was seen on security footage walking away from the building and getting into the backseat of a car at 12:30. Unfortunately, due to the grainy footage, they couldn't determine a make or model of the car or even make out the license plate. So her mother, Mary, had a theory that she snuck out with her friends, came back home, and then snuck out a second time to meet another person or persons.
Well, okay, so I don't understand this. I know people, and especially teenagers, keep things from their parents, right? You don't tell them all of your hopes and dreams, or if you do, you're far and few between. But what kind of life are you leading if you're actually not telling your friends, like your very closest friends, what you're really doing? I feel like your friends at that age know everything.
Yes, I 100% agree with you. And I mean, Mary's probably just trying to make sense of like what could be going on, like of the things she knows. She knows that, you know, these girls that she sees all the time that are constantly in her house around her daughter, they're telling her this thing like, oh, yeah, we brought Skylar home at 12. Like, we don't know what happened after that. So she's just probably trying to make sense of, all right, well, if you brought her home at 12, you like, and you called me telling me, oh, I have to tell you the truth. Something's been eating at you. So you're, right, you know, telling me the truth. I have to make sense of why she's walking away at 12:30.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You trust the people telling you the only information you're really getting.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Well, unfortunately, since it looked like Skylar left on her own accord, police treated the case as a runaway case and no Amber Alert was issued. Sheila immediately went over to the niece's house to comfort her second parents. Dave recalls that Sheila spent a lot of time over the house telling them, quote, it'll be okay. She'll be home. I really miss her. I love her. I want her back. So even the next day, Sheila and Mary sat together on Skylar's bed, crying and comforting each other. The pair joined together to distribute missing persons posters, knocking on people's doors, and asking if they had seen Skylar, and of course showing them pictures of her. The whole family was, of course, worried, but especially Skylar's Aunt Carol, who had an awful feeling in the pit of her stomach. Dave turned to the local news to make a plea for her return. Unfortunately, by Sunday, Skylar still had not come home. The community had a candlelight vigil. All of her school friends were there, including her BFFs, Sheila and Rachel, bawling their eyes out and hugging Skylar's parents. Dave remembers that Mary was so concerned for her daughter's friends, she kept asking, quote, what can we do to help these girls? How can we help these girls?
Which, I mean, it honestly just goes to show what a big heart she has and how empathetic her mom is. She's in the middle of the devastation of her daughter being missing, yet she's so focused on how to help her daughter's friends.
Yes. What a sweet person to be worried about, I guess, other children. You can't put the concern towards your daughter directly because she's not there. Mm-hmm. So focus on her friends who you love and trust. Yeah. No, it makes total sense. And yeah, it's very sweet. So one of Sheila's close family friends, Chrissy, remembers her being so very worried and distressed during this time. On Dateline, she recalls that Sheila was trying so hard to help them find anything to find out really what had happened. Morgan Lawrence, which, refresher, is Skylar's oldest friend that they drifted apart a little in the very beginning, was away at camp and had read the news that her friend was missing on Facebook.
Which is fucking heartbreaking.
I know. I cannot imagine finding out, well, actually bad news at all on Facebook.
Exactly.
So yeah. Impersonal. But no.
I would have hoped that, like, her parents would have called the camp or something.
Yeah.
As soon as they found,
Yeah, no idea. She recalls on Dateline being so worried all the time that she was actually sick to her stomach. And she wasn't the only one. Officer Colbank was incredibly concerned as well. She went back to the office every night to review the security footage, hoping to glimpse something new and getting Facebook records. She was swamped with tips that Skylar was seen in places from nearby Morgantown to New York to even California. Unfortunately, each and every one of these tips was a dead end. When the officer pulled Skylar's record, she found that there was no activity on her cell phone or ATM card, which is pretty unusual in a runaway case. And this led to Officer Colby doubting that Skylar actually had run away. She's quoted in Dateline, in the Dateline podcast, saying, quote, usually runaways, they take items with them that they want, especially if she had contacts and glasses. She didn't take any of that stuff with her. So, I mean, to me, like, hopefully this whole runaway thing dies up pretty quickly. There's a really short amount of time that you find a missing person. Like, you really need to take that seriously.
100%. Gotta agree. So, little bright light, a new lead pops up. It turns out that there had been 2 bank robberies in nearby Blacksville around the time that Skylar disappeared. One of the investigators assigned to the robberies was Corporal or Investigator Ronnie Gaskins. While looking into the robberies, Ronnie was given a tip that led to him being called into the investigation of Skylar's disappearance. What was the tip, you might ask?
Of course I do.
Of course. It was that Skylar may have been at a party with one of the robbers.
Dun, dun, dun.
So not only was she at the party, but she's rumored to have overdosed at the party. And then the partygoers got scared and hid the body. Now, this is just one of many rumors that eventually led to nowhere. And it also seemed pretty unlikely since Skylar didn't actually use heavy drugs. I think she had maybe like dabbled in marijuana once or twice.
Yeah, okay, so seems slightly far-fetched. I mean, the story itself, not implausible.
True.
But if she's not typically in that situation, what are the chances of it being really true?
And what are the odds that the first time she tries hard drugs, she overdoses and then everyone panics?
Right.
Yeah. I'm with you. So at this point, Skylar had been missing for over a month. And Ronnie Gaskins had become very invested in solving this case. And he decided to do something that he and probably every officer didn't like to do. He made a promise, a vow, that he was going to find Skylar, that he'd never give up and never stop looking. Skylar's friends recall the start of school in the fall being especially hard. One classmate in particular, Shayna Ammons, says on the Dateline podcast that starting school without Skylar was probably one of the hardest days of her being missing, that Skylar was a go-to person at school. Morgan was dreading the morning roll call. In the Dateline podcast, she talked about dreading hearing her name and struggling with what to tell the teacher since they didn't know if she was coming back or not. And now, to me, I think that it might have just been her teenage brain, because with it being such a small town, I would think that Skylar wouldn't be on any class roster because everyone knows that she went missing in July and hadn't been found yet. But, like, am I being too callous?
I mean, I guess she could have been enrolled in school and just, like, kind of automatically on the attendance list, but you would think the teachers would at least know not to call out her name.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe that's, yeah. I don't know, I guess that's.
Yeah, I mean, I could see her still being, like, on list, but yes, you would, like, think people would be very cautious of what they said, and you would think the teachers had all been kind of trained on how to speak about it and help the kids through something like that. And that's a pretty big deal in a school for kids that age, especially.
Especially, yeah. No, I'm with you. But so, in some aspects, life seemed to be almost back to normal. Skylar's other friends were back in school. And as they do, rumors started to churn through the high school and on social media. Kids were spreading all kinds of stories, from that Skylar had overdosed, like we mentioned earlier, to that she had moved to a different country, to that she was simply in hiding or had run away. A lot of kids knew that Rachel and Sheila were the last people to see Skylar alive. Many thought that they might be helping her stay hidden, or that they might be covering for someone else. You know, there's that whole rumor that she OD'd and someone hid the body.
Right.
Yeah. There is one classmate, Daniel Hovatter, who was in drama with Rachel and remembers telling Rachel on multiple occasions that if she knew anything, she had to say something, which of course led to one of the biggest rumors that the girls knew something, but they just weren't talking.
All of a sudden, the FBI was involved. They came to the school and started interviewing students individually, which sounds slightly intimidating for kids, but, you know, obviously part of the process. One of the questions the FBI was asking was, did Rachel and Sheila seem different? One student told them that the girls didn't seem different per se, but that they seemed to be more isolated and that they had started to keep to themselves. Rachel and Sheila had been closest to Skylar and some of the last people to see her alive. It wasn't surprising that they were being constantly interviewed by police. They were pulled from all kinds of events, though. Football games, play rehearsals, all just anything at school, but all to answer questions as they just kind of came up. Skylar's parents, Mary and Dave, thought the police were wasting their time talking to the girls so much. They knew these girls so well. They even went as far as to ask police to leave them alone, since they just knew they were going through so much and they really didn't need all of this hassles, Chris.
All of the extra... Yeah.
Questioning? I don't know. Stress. Stress. The extra stress.
Good word.
Yes. Ronnie Gaskins interviewed the two girls. He remembers Sheila being calm and collected and being able to look him in the eye, but Rachel was distracted, doodling on her desk. Their stories stayed the same throughout everything, though. They picked Skylar, drove around Morgantown, smoked a little weed, and then they dropped her off about midnight. Unfortunately for the girls, police had started to collect evidence that contradicted their story. Yes. They were caught on surveillance from a convenience store headed in the opposite direction of what they had reported. They claimed that they drove east towards Morgantown, but their car was actually headed west on the tapes. So they were headed back towards Blacksville. Rachel's cell phone records even had her phone ping off a tower in Blacksville itself.
Shady.
Exactly. This evidence had Skylar's parents starting to change their mind. Maybe the two girls knew more than they were letting on. Mary started posting on social media to try to put more pressure on the girls. I think I remember one of the things she posted was something like, karma will get you, or something like that, which I find surprising because it's very point A to point B. She turned on them really quickly.
Yeah, complete 180.
I mean, I get it. It's your daughter. So, I mean, cut them off if you think they're lying to you, but just going from, like, full defense to, like, head on the chopping block is a little surprising.
It is. 100% with you. Then, in late November, Rachel shocked police by changing her story. She finally admitted that the three girls drove out to Blacksville on the night that they snuck out. She said this is actually where Skylar asked to be let out of the car, not at the end of her road. The next day, Sheila changed her story to the exact same thing. I mean, like, come on. Rachel had to have gone home and called or texted or Facebook messaged Sheila or something to say something like, hey, like, this is what I just told the police, so you might want to do the same.
Yeah, totally. There has to be some obvious connection between the two.
Yeah, especially if it's happening so close together.
Yeah, but I guess they also could have just gone to each other's houses.
But in the small town.
Yeah, yeah. In the small town. But
I was going to say, depending how close they live, but...
Small town.
Yeah, exactly. So Rachel's demeanor started to change, too. She seemed to be on edge, agitated, and was even acting out at home. And then, on December 28th, she snapped. She was running through the neighborhood, screaming, and her parents were struggling so much to control her that they called 911. After she was picked up, Rachel was taken to a mental health facility, and a few days later, she wanted to meet with police at her attorney's office. Ronnie Gaskins went to meet with her. He and other investigators started asking Rachel the questions that they thought she might have answers to. Did the girls actually go to a party that night? Did Skylar overdose? Ronnie remembers Rachel pulling up a trash can closer to herself, her face getting really red, and her glancing up at him, then saying, "We stabbed her."
Oh my God.
The two girls had planned the murder for months. In the meantime, they kept up appearances, looking and acting like Skylar's best friends. After they decided on the night of July 5th, Rachel took a shovel from her dad's house, and the two girls put the shovel, cleaning supplies, kitchen knives that Sheila had grabbed, and a change of clothes into the trunk of Sheila's car. That night, they called Skylar to let her know they were on their way over. She snuck out, thinking that they were going to go to an area that the girls frequented to hang out, talk, smoke some pot, you know, the usual. Then one of the girls said that they forgot to grab a lighter, so Skylar said she'd grab hers out of the car and started to head back that way. It's at that point that Rachel counted to three, their agreed-upon signal, and that they then began to stab her from behind. Skylar fought hard to defend herself. At one point, she was starting to get away, and then the girls stabbed her in the knee so that she couldn't.
Oh, my God.
I can't even imagine.
No.
And as I can imagine knowing, Skylar kept asking, why? Ugh. The girls covered Skylar's body with dirt and branches and then put their bloody clothes in the trunk and left. Rachel told police that they picked the date because the murder was something that they wanted to get done before she left for church camp. Yeah. What the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God. That's all I could think. I mean, I guess what their mentality was is like, well, I don't want this murder to mess up my plans, so we got to schedule it around going to church camp.
Yeah.
But, oh my God. Like, that is some mean, cruel, psychotic shit.
Yeah, wouldn't want a murder to get in the way of, like, your time with God.
No, of course what a not.
Great Christian she was. So, when asked why they did it, which I know is on everyone's mind, Rachel said that the girls simply didn't like Skylar anymore. So, like, I'm sorry, stop talking to her?
Yeah, but there has to be more than that. No one goes from just being best friends to plotting a murder overnight.
I 100% mean, I guess agree.
Not anyone mentally stable, like, actually.
I guess.
Well, it's not the normal thing to do, let me put it that way.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes. So Rachel led police to the area where the girls committed their heinous act and showed them where they had left Skylar's body. Her confession was withheld from the press and even from Dave and Mary. They did tell Dave and Mary that remains were thought to be Skylar's were found. And then February of 2013 came, and as was tradition, they gathered with family and friends to celebrate Skylar's birthday. Here they quietly told a few people, like the Lawrence family, you know, Morgan's family, the news about the remains.
Even though they had a confession from Rachel, she was not arrested at this point. Now, why, might you ask?
I'm dying to know.
Yes. Well, she had lied to police several times already, so they had to actually corroborate this story. Plus, if she was telling the truth, they wanted to make sure that they got Sheila to confess, too.
All right, that makes sense.
Yeah, smart. So investigators hatched a plan. They installed hidden cameras and microphones at Rachel's house. Rachel was to invite Sheila over and get her to incriminate herself. Not that I know much about Rachel at this point, but, I mean, this girl has no loyalty.
None.
Just turning right on over. Now, granted, she probably should have turned over on Sheila, so, like, I'm good with that one, but still, just questioning her loyalty overall. I guess that happened in the very beginning of this story. Anywho, unfortunately, the plan that police had hatched did not work. The girls were pretty casual, but nothing incriminating was actually discussed. A few days later, the police showed up at Sheila's house with a warrant. They took every kitchen knife that they could find in the house. The FBI took Sheila's car for testing, where they did find the presence of DNA in the trunk. They collected and sent away the DNA for further testing. While they were waiting for results of the tests, Gaskins received the results of the test on the remains. They were positively identified as Skylar Neese. As the news spread throughout the school, students were understandably devastated. Shayna, one of the girls we mentioned earlier, recalls calling Sheila and the two girls crying together. And Sheila was asking Shayna, who do you think could have done this? Why would someone do that to Skylar? Another friend that Sheila cried with was Chrissy, again asking how someone could possibly do this to someone like Skylar. As teens do, she took to social media, tweeting about it being the worst day of her life, how Skylar would always be her best friend, rest easy, those types of things. But as police continued their investigation, the girls went back to life as usual in their online world, posting pictures at the prom, tweeting things about needing mimosas.
I'm sorry, you're a teenager. What?
I mean, they just murdered someone, so almost is not a huge jump.
Yeah, but, Yes. And I underage drink, but I never put it online.
Well, I bet they did it wrong, you know, way too much orange juice.
With a splash of champagne.
Yeah, so it's like barely even drinking.
Got it. That makes sense.
But so one of the most disturbing things that Sheila tweeted said, "We really did go on three." I'm going to say it again. Quote, "We really did go on three," end quote. Like, not one, not two, not three. Remember that number from earlier? Perhaps a signal? Yeah. So that seems to have been possible reference to the night that they actually killed Skylar. They put that shit on social media. Which just goes to show how invincible the girls thought they really were. April 2013 brought some much-needed good news for Ronnie Gaskins. Confirmation that the DNA in the trunk of Sheila's car was Skylar's. This, combined with the surveillance footage, cell phone records, Rachel's confession, police had the probable cause they needed to make arrest. They now had to tell the heartbreaking news to Dave and Mary Neese. Their daughter's two best friends and the girls they had trusted and loved had indeed killed her.
On May 1st, 2013, in exchange for cooperating with police, Rachel pled guilty to second-degree murder. Minutes later, Ronnie Gaskin raced across town with a murder warrant in hand. Sheila was arrested in the parking lot of the Cracker Barrel where she and her mother were having lunch. Ronnie remembers that Sheila kept asking her mom if everything was going to be okay, to which her mom just responded, "I don't know, Sheila."
Oh my god! The inflection was so unexpected, I just spit all over my computer.
Oh my god. Sorry. I was feeling myself.
Oh my god, that got me good.
So like, I mean, big ol' eye roll from me here. Like, you murdered your friend and then played like you didn't. Kept asking people who could have done something like this, crying with them. You clearly have no soul, devil.
Well, yes, that's true, but I'm sure she was scared, right? Like, she thought she was gonna get away with it.
No, just don't do it to begin with.
Yeah, but people that don't think about consequences are like, everything's fine and dandy if I just don't think about it, you know? It's not in front of me. It's not happening. I can just compartmentalize all these things over here.
I can't see it. It's not real.
Right. And then all of a sudden, cops are at your door, and you're like, oh.
Yeah, I did do that.
I have to do what now? Go to jail?
Yeah.
Ugh. Mm. That's not going to work for me. I have to go to prom, so.
Well, they already went to prom, so that's fine.
Anyways.
Anyhow, as more people talked about it, and more details of the murder came about and what was known, some more interesting conversations came to light. At some point before the murder, students in the school remembered hearing Sheila and Rachel talk about the best way to kill someone.
Not suspect at all.
I also have seen that the conversation was about the best way to dispose of a body, which was argued away with something being covered in biology or science or like some other class like that, but
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. There's one student that recalls Rachel ranting about how she didn't like Skylar one day and saying something along the lines of, "I wouldn't mind if she died."
Whoa. Red flag.
Yeah.
Hello, red flag.
Yeah. I like, in hindsight, it's a red flag, but I'm also sure that it's like one of those just like teenager being like over dramatic, like
fair
type things. Like, in the moment you wouldn't be like, oh my god, you're totally gonna murder her because you said that. It's just like, oh yeah, like whatever, like,
yeah, you're over her. I was so mad at her too.
Yeah
Okay.
There's actually a cell phone video recording about 6 months before Skylar's murder where Sheila can be seen asking Rachel and Skylar which way they would rather die, to suffocate or to get shot. And then a follow-up question, would they rather suffocate or drown? Which I feel like are the same, but
yeah.
It's just a yeah, kind of creepy ass, yeah. Like, you know, thing to come up. Friends report that in the months leading up to her death, Skylar and Sheila were fighting constantly. There's another little red flag for you.
Yeah.
So let's actually get back to Rachel and Sheila getting arrested. Dave and Mary were dreading the idea of a trial. A trial meant that they had to sit and relive every gruesome, painful detail of their daughter's murder. They were struggling with the guilt that they should have known more about what was going on in Skylar's life before she died, and the regrets of not knowing the girls better.
Well, they, of course, were racked with guilt, thinking that they somehow, like, could have done more for their daughter. I mean, it makes sense.
It does. And hindsight's always 20/20. You always are going to have that, like, kind of survivor's guilt. Like, what could I have done differently? Right. What? Yeah.
Especially for your kid. Good Lord. Like, no parent should ever lose a child. Ever.
Especially not in this way.
Yeah, agreed.
So, luckily, in January of 2014, the nieces got what they had been hoping for, a plea deal. Sheila pled guilty to Skylar's murder. Her attorney read a statement on behalf of Sheila and her family. They recognized, quote, that the niece family was in a constant state of despair, loneliness, and sadness as a result of Skylar's death, end quote. I'm sorry. How about as the result of the actions of your client? Like, she clearly has no remorse for what she did. She's distancing herself from the act of killing her, just saying, from Skylar's death, they are very sad.
Yeah.
Ugh, no.
No, I mean, there are a lot of mental problems in here. And, I mean, I am not a professional, but I'm going to go with one of the girls is more to blame than the other.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. There's so many problems with that statement.
Yeah. So, Sheila was sentenced to life in prison and is actually eligible for parole in 2028, which is... So, it's only 7 years away.
Yeah, that's not a long sentence. People get sentenced longer for, like, having weed in their car.
Yeah.
That is insane.
Well, I mean, technically her sentence is life, but she's eligible for parole. No, fuck that. She murdered her best friend and, oh, no. I have all the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah, no, I think parole should be... You know what? I'll just keep my own opinions to myself. In February 2014, Dave and Mary were back in the courtroom for Rachel's sentencing. Therapist Patricia Bailey was hired by Rachel's family and had continuously met with her in prison since the summer of 2013. She reports that Rachel had a profound sadness at the loss of Skylar and for Dave and Mary. She says that from the day she met Rachel, she said she had deserved to be in prison because she did something terribly wrong and hurt someone. She said that she also missed Skylar, that she would cry for her and... knows that she can't undo the past and that she hurt her and she'll never see Skylar again. Rachel apologized directly to Dave and Mary, saying that there were not words to describe the guilt and remorse she feels every day for what she did. She also said she was scared and caught up in something that she didn't want to do. Finally, she said she didn't realize the gravity of her actions or how many people she would end up hurting. Dave responded with that she could take her apology and sit on it. Because that's all it was worth. Rachel was sentenced to 30 years in prison. She'll be eligible for parole in 2023.
Which is even closer.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I'm actually happy to see that she has an earlier parole opportunity.
And she's actually showing remorse. Right. And, like
I
realize this, yeah.
Based on all of my opinions, I feel like she was definitely the, like, tag along in the situation. She felt pressured into it because typically there's a mastermind.
Mm-hmm.
The likelihood of two people being 100% on board with one plan.
So like unusual. Sheila was the alpha and Rachel was the beta.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So not saying she should not be held accountable for everything she did, especially the lies afterwards, because, you know, I do understand to an extent the heat of the moment and how things kind of get away from you, but she still lied for, God, what was it, like 2 months?
Months, yeah.
Plural months. Yeah, more than a month.
Months, yeah.
So there was plenty of time for her to try to correct her mistake and kind of help police and her parents, and, well, not her parents, Skylar's parents, and all kinds of things that she could have done. So, anywho. Prosecutor Marcia Ashdown says not to be fooled by the girl's appearance. Quote, they planned that crime not just for hours, but days, weeks, months. The horror of that is really what strikes us at the end. Not how the girls look in shackles, end quote. Which, actually, solid point, Marcia. That's true. I forgot about how long they had actually planned that out.
Yeah.
So I kind of take back my response. Actually, I still think that she should be have the option of parole earlier. But regardless. In June 2013, Dave and Mary had a memorial service at the site where Skylar was killed. They also helped to pass Skylar's Law in Pennsylvania, which requires police to issue an Amber Alert even when they think a teen has run away. A national version was passed in February 2019. So I'm glad to see when a case actually has kind of like an overall, not happy ending, but like progress has been made.
Progress has
Something
been made.
Came of it mm-hmm. that was a positive, and hopefully that will help, that law will help other children in the future.
Yes.
But, I mean, that is so heavy.
It's so heavy.
It was such an intense story. And, I mean, I guess in a couple of years, we're going to find out what happens with the girls.
Yeah. And hopefully in 2023, we're still doing this and kicking ass, and we can give you an update.
Yeah. Oh, God, that'd be so crazy. Anyways.
Well, we're coming up on a year already.
Woo!
Ooh. Well. But,
okay, so after all of that, I think I'm ready for a little wine.
We'll wind down.
Let's wind down.
Let's wind down. Let's do it. All right. And we're back. And Avery, can you please tell me more about this mask that we're doing tonight?
We're doing the Ahava Hydration Cream Mask. So if the brand was founded in 1988 and is created to harness the power of minerals from the Dead Sea, their formulas are infused with vitamin-rich botanicals and minerals that help keep your skin happy, healthy, and hydrated. So why you will love this mask specifically is because it's literally, it's all about the hydration. It's really creamy. It packs in moisture, so much moisture, and you can use it for as little as 3 minutes to see its effects.
Woot woot.
Yep. So the Dead Sea mud is like kind of what it's made of. Gently draws out impurities, leaving your skin feel clean and refreshed. It also doubles as an overnight mask. So if you think your skin needs a little extra TLC, you actually can just leave it on. And if you have sensitive skin, it's gentle enough for both your skin and if your skin is extremely dry. So this is for everybody. And along with all of their other products, it is vegan and paraben free. So the two ingredients I called out in this one is, number one, the biggest ingredient in this mask is mineral spring water, which I thought really wasn't very interesting. But when I Googled it, it says a 2010 study found that this type of water can help relieve skin irritation and improve the tolerability of skincare products. It also has detoxing and healing properties, which, I mean, I guess I've heard of it to some extent because it's really good for your skin to, you know, like go soak in a mineral spring or, you know, just.
Yeah, I feel like everything that comes from the Dead Sea is like supposed to be really good for your skin and really detoxifying and like rejuvenating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those other,
you know, fountain of
keywords.
Youth type of stuff.
Yeah,
yeah. So I know that minerals from the earth are good for us in general. That's why we drink the types of water we do. Even mineral spring water is even more so. So I get it, but I did find it interesting that it is good for skin irritation. And also list it, like if you go soaking in a mineral spring, it's really good for like eczema and like all types of just skin issues. So
maybe really good for my dry ass elbows,
probably.
Oh,
okay,
we'll talk about that later. Sorry to cut you off.
I put some mask on your elbows. Do it. All right, so the second ingredient is caprylic triglyceride. Sorry if I said that wrong, but I think that's right. Usually it's made from combining coconut oil with glycerin. This works as an antioxidant and helps smooth your skin. It's widely used to actually bind ingredients together and can work as a preservative, making the active ingredients in cosmetics last longer. So that's cool. It's really just getting you more bang for your buck out of the products you're buying.
I'm into it.
Yeah. All right. So we've already generally talked about how you put this on, but it's a just regular cream-based mask, so honestly, you just rub it on your clean skin, and you just rub it in until it's fully absorbed. We've put it on already, and it's really thin. It just kind of looks like you have too much moisturizer on your face. I mean, it doesn't look like anything.
It's not exciting and pretty like our other masks, but it feels good.
Yeah, it feels nice. But so you can leave it on for about 3 to 5 minutes. But you can also leave it on all night if you want more intense hydration.
Which is what we're going to do.
Yeah, I've used this mask a couple of times. I always leave it on at night, but I also have dry skin. So I just really enjoy the long-term effects because in the winter, we all need all the hydration we can't get.
Exactly. Yeah. And I've been with the extra cold weather we've been having lately. I requested something very hydrating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, your skin's gonna like this.
I'm excited.
I'm glad you put it on your elbows, because I have thought about putting it, like, on my hands or something, and I'm sure it would be just fine. If it's good for my face, it's probably good for any part of your body.
I feel like your face is probably your most sensitive skin area. I'm not a professional, but definitely much more sensitive than, like, your elbows or your hands that are constantly touching things or rubbing up against things.
Right.
So I feel like you'd be safe to put it on your manos.
Mm-hmm. My manos?
My manos. I'm in a weird place today. I feel like we all are.
Yeah. Well, I feel like all of the snow we've been having is not helping.
All of just the weather.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just gray. And then just even more inside than we already are.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely, like, no going out for walks or...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But no. A solid reason for us to do a hydration mask. So
Yes. That's
perfect. And also, a couple of other, like, random hydration things that you and I both have kind of been doing. Actually, not necessarily on purpose. Like, we weren't doing it together. Maybe I mentioned it to you. I don't know. But so I've been taking electrolytes to help my water intake, and that's not only because my skin's dry, but because I drink a ton of water. And people have pointed out to me that maybe it means I don't retain water very well, which would also lead to dehydration. So doing that, as well as taking collagen supplements, which is really more so for my skin than anything.
Yeah.
And I don't really know how to tell if that's working. But I know taking collagen is not bad for you, so I'm just, like, going to keep going with it.
Yeah. No. I looked into, I think you told me about you get like, your electrolytes and your vitamins and stuff from Care of.
Yeah.
I looked into it, and I took the quiz a couple of times,
mm-hmm.
kind of played around with it. I think I am going to try out a couple of their, like, vitamins and supplements. I am slightly hesitant about their electrolytes, because the version they have right now, they say tastes like coconut water, and I absolutely despise coconut water.
Oh, I got unflavored.
Oh, see, they only currently say have the coconut water one.
Oh, yeah. No, mine was unflavored, so they must have.
I thought yours was tasted like lemonade, or is that something different?
It's new.
That one's new?
Yeah, I bought...
Is that not from Care of?
It is not. I got that off Amazon.
Oh, because you'll have to send me the link.
I didn't like that they came in individual packages because of just, like, the waste factor.
Yeah.
So I went through and I did it, and I just wanted to see if I liked how it went. And once I realized that, yes, I would like to keep trying it, I found one of the larger tubs off of Amazon.
Okay. Will you send me a link?
Yeah.
Tonight? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah, because I, over the past couple of days, other than, obviously, like, tonight and last night,
mm-hmm.
I've been trying to only drink on weekends and, like, when I'm with people and, like, doing things mm-hmm. other than just, like, oh, well, I'm sitting at home, I'm, you know, working on this story, I'm going to have a glass of wine that turns into, you know, 2 or 3 glasses of wine.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to just strictly stick to, like, I'll have a cup of coffee in the morning, and then I generally drink just water. Sometimes I'll drink, like, a tea or something, but... I've noticed the past couple of days, I've also been working out a lot more, so I've mm-hmm. been, like, a lot thirstier, but I have gone through almost an entire, like, jumbo, like, 24-pack of Powerade in the last, like, week alone, and so I feel like I'm not, because I'm working out more and sweating mm-hmm. more, I need to up, like, electrolytes would be good for me, but I don't want to also consume all of the, even though I drink, like, the zero sugar or, like, whatever Powerades, I feel like doing just electrolytes is probably better than doing the sugary, like,
yeah,
sports drinks.
Well, and so that's why I actually did the care.com or care of, not care.com, different. But that's why I did their electrolytes, because theirs are zero sugar, mm-hmm. and that's actually surprisingly hard to find.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like Pedialyte, there's so much sugar in Pedialyte.
It's because it's designed for children.
Right. Yeah, and it's, you know, for, like, is that for diabetics as well? Elderly? For sick people. Just people that are
sick, yeah.
Yeah. In need of more, like, vitamins and, I don't know,
yeah,
supplements. Anywho's.
You love me. You've never said that before. It's cute.
I have no idea what I'm talking about, so I'm just going to get off that topic. But so I looked at like all of these low sugar electrolyte options and then found this one. Most of them come in really disgusting flavors, if you ask me, because I'm with you. I typically only drink coffee and water on a normal basis, so I am not a juice flavor. I don't want fruit punch. I just want water. I want water-flavored water.
See, I don't mind the flavors of, like, the Powerades and stuff, but I just know that I'm consuming so much. Even though it's, like, zero sugar, there's other things. Like, there's carbs and there's, like, all this other stuff that's, like, contributing to my overall health. And, like, I'm trying to, like, tone down and lose all my COVID weight and all my stress weight from Mini and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And so, like, anything I can do to, like, keep a few extra things out of my body.
Right. Yes. Clean life. Yeah. In general, yeah, which is disappointing how hard it is to actually have a clean life, but that's why I landed on this one, because it's one of the few low sugar, I think there might be like 1 gram of sugar in it, maybe, I don't know, it's not much in comparison. The others are all like 7 and 8 grams of sugar. It's so much.
Well, and you've made it for like me and Rich before on like days after, like we've all three like had like a drinking binge.
Yeah,
it's delicious. It tastes just like lemonade.
Just like lemonade. Mm-hmm. Which is actually speaks volumes. I'm not a huge lemonade fan. Again, I just don't really like flavored drinks.
See, I feel like I can see you being like a lemonade drink. Or what's it called? That's an iced tea with vodka. What's a lemonade and vodka called?
A spiked lemonade?
Yeah, I can see like on a... I'm sure it has an actual name. Like iced tea and vodka is an ice pick. So what's lemonade and vodka?
Oh, I don't know. I would have called that spiked tea. So anyways.
Iced tea. But no, that would be like your summer drink.
I see where you're going with, because I like a good clean, like easy to drink ice cold beverage in the summer. But that's why I have a lot of things that are like tonic or club soda based. Typically if I need some flavor to it, it's like a lime. It's not really much. Are you Googling it?
I'm Googling it. It's literally just called a vodka lemonade. Yeah, no, so there's
not
like,
even a spiked lemonade.
Literally everything's just like, oh, vodka lemonade. There's John Daly, but that's an Arnold Palmer with vodka.
Right, yeah. That's what I was thinking. All I could think was Arnold Palmer, but that's, yeah.
Yeah, it's just vodka. They should come up with a better name for that. I'm just saying. They being...
The alcohol consumers. The alcohol gods of the world.
Yes.
But so how's your face feeling?
Moist.
Well, good.
Sorry. I'm not going to lie, though. First, when I put it on, it did kind of have like a tingly sensation. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's normal or expected, but
mine does that too.
Okay, it has subsided, and now it just feels like almost plump. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when you put on like those like lip plumpers,
yeah,
it's what my whole face feels like.
Yeah, I can see that.
So it feels plump and moist,
which seem like positives.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you look very glowy.
Why, thank you. Mm-hmm. Oh, how does your face feel?
Oh, it feels... I think you actually described it pretty well. Like, everything's kind of soaked in. My skin's a little, like... There's residue on it, but it should be because we haven't washed it off.
Yeah.
But we talked about...
it in the morning.
Yeah, it's like, we're just going to leave it on all night because it's a really fine layer of a mask. It will soak in.
Is doing an overnight mask.
Yeah, and I've had no problems. It doesn't leave residue on your pillow. It's nice. It's clean, it's refreshing, it's easy. It smells nice.
I don't really feel like it has a scent.
And there's a very subtle perfume. Smell the bottle.
No, instead of trying to smell my own face.
Yes, as you try to sniff your face.
I could have tried to smell my elbows.
Which also is hard.
Goes just as well.
Silly.
Fun fact. Speaking of smelling your elbows, not that it's the same. You know how they say you can't lick your elbow?
Mm-hmm.
I know a girl that can.
Interesting. I've heard of people being able to do that, but I've never seen someone lick their elbow.
Yeah, I think she's... It was a girl that I was, used to be really close with. Like, we talk every once in a while, but...
You used to have, like, short...
I think she...
Upper arms?
I think she was double-jointed in her elbow and then also had a really long tongue.
Oh.
But she, like...
You used to have all the right properties.
Exactly. But it used to be, like, one of her, like, drinking party tricks. Like...
Heck yeah, if I could lick my elbow...
I'll bet you whatever that...
Of course.
I can lick my elbow.
People have done way weirder things as bets or their drinking show-off activity.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, this does have a... it's, like, almost a sweet smell.
Yeah. It's slightly perfumey, but very subtle.
It reminds me of a breakfast pastry.
Oh, I could see that. Yeah.
Not quite a cinnamon roll.
Oh, no.
Maybe a Danish?
Yeah, just a really... a little bit of sugar.
Yeah.
But it's pretty natural smelling.
Yeah.
I don't think it's sweet by any means.
Yeah. No, it's not nothing overpowering or, like, super perfumed or sugary. Like... It just reminds me of a breakfast pastry.
Mm-hmm.
Reminds me of the morning time.
Yeah. But, okay. I mean, we're going to leave it on tonight, but do we want to grade it now? Or we just be like, in general, we're going to give it an A because we like it before we try it.
I'm going to give it a B+.
Okay.
Because it was a slightly off-putting to me how tingly my face was at first. But it, like I said, it does, like, right now it feels fine. Feels moist. It feels fine. Like, fine. I want to stop saying fine. It feels good, but I do want to see what the overall results are.
Mm-hmm.
I might, you know, decide tomorrow morning, like, oh, actually my face feels really good. I'm going to give it an A. But for now, I want to give it a B+ because I just don't 100% know yet.
Yeah. No, that's fair.
Yeah. But you, who have, you've used it in the past, you have more of an idea of what it's going to do for your skin. So I feel like your grade will speak a little bit more volume than mine does.
Yeah. I mean, I give this an A just because it's so freaking easy and it makes my skin hydrated and it doesn't, like, make you greasy or break your skin out afterwards, or at least not for me. So, I mean, it does exactly what I want it to do. So A in my book.
Okay.
Yeah.
So B+, A- overall.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that might be it for this week.
Yeah.
Just a reminder, make sure to follow us on all the socials, at Mass Murder Podcast on Instagram, like our page on Facebook. If you have any questions, comments, any mask recommendations or case recommendations or anything you want to just chat about, go ahead and email us at massmurderpodcast@gmail.com. And... that's all for this week.
Take care of yourselves.
Sources for this week include abcnews.go.com, ahava.com, allthat'sinteresting.com, amberalert.ojp.gov, skylarniecemurder.com, treehugger.com, wikipedia.org, and the Dateline podcast episode titled Something Wicked from October 4th, 2019. Which was also televised during season 22, episode 25, on March 7th, 2014.